Session number 16721, David Gregg, reel 2.
Mr. Gregg, reel 2. You moved from Willington to Ushermoor. Do you recall what time of the year that was?
Oh. Well, it would be, oh, dear me. What we doing about January? About February? Beginning of February, something like that. And we were built in the miners' hall. A lot of the places, the miners' hall, they always seem to billet troops in them, you know. But at Ushermoor, we were making assaults up the hillside. At the top of the hill, behind the hall, was it's like a church, monastery place, you know. And if we captured that once, we've captured it about a dozen times, you know. Bruce Shanks.
Still hadn't got your weapons.
Yeah. And we were there about a month.
And this was all you were doing at Ushermoor, this kind of training. Where were you billeted in Ushermoor?
In the miners' hall.
And was it again lying on the floors with palliasse, or did you have beds?
Palliasses.
What was army food like that you were getting?
Oh, it was at first, you know, you got tin bowl and Dixies and things like this, you know. But after a while, the first week, but after you got over that tin, that you were hungry and you got over it and you just took in and you got some good food.
What kind of food was it?
Well,
say for example, for breakfast, what would you get?
Oh, bacon and egg. Quaker oats, you know, porridge.
And for lunch?
And lunch, you'd get your dinner. McConaughey's and stuff like this, you know.
And then you'd have a break for tea?
Yeah, break for tea.
What might you get for tea?
Probably a bit of cheese or something like that, you know. Just of course, when tea time, you were finished your duties like for the day, and you were getting toughed up to go down to town, into town, like, you know.
But, was there a canteen for you at Ushermoor?
No. But there's a picture hall. We used to go down to the picture hall. You got to know local people, you know, the women and that used to pop in and, "Are you all right, lads?" You know, still more than you like.
You invited to their homes for meals?
Sometimes you got an invite.
And was Ushermoor then an extension of your training?
Oh, yes, I.
Had you done any training for gas precautions at this stage?
No, no. It was just explained to you. We didn't have a gas mask, just for a civilian gas mask. Now, we were at Ushermoor roughly about a month.
Bayonet training, had that come into you? Were you training with the bayonet?
I had the rifles well up in the air, out and on guard, this business. Now then, we were there about a month at Ushermoor when all of a sudden, right, pack up. We're moving out. We ended up at West Hartlepool. When we got there, I said, "Right, you're going to get your rifle." Then we got the rifle. "Now that's your friend for your long term now, are we? You know, we've got a gas mask. You do this, you put it on. Now, go along, there's a gas chamber, test for gas," and we got all the instructions.
And this was going at the chamber?
in the gas chamber place, you know.
With your gas mask on, had you to take it off whilst you were in there at all?
No, test for gas, you know. And eventually, you got used to it, you know. And it was about a week after we were on the train.
Had you had any leave before you went off?
Oh, you got weekends, you know. I mean, at weekend, you got day passes. You were home for the day. Or Saturday, you had a pass to cover you and come back a Sunday.
Mm-hmm. In the various places that you were in, the Eshwin and Ashamua, in the rooms and that, you'd have to keep those clean yourselves.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, you had to, yeah. You got those different duties, you know, room orderly and things like this, you know. And you got your knuckles wrapped if you didn't keep everything clean.
Did you have regular inspections?
Oh, aye. At least once a week. The sergeant used to come. This was part of the training. Later on, when you were in barracks and that, everything had to be read. You know, regimental. Socks down and everything.
Your leisure time in those early days, when you say your work at the end of the day was finished, what, other than going out, of course, as you've mentioned, what kind of things were going on in the barrack room? Was there any gambling, for example? Were playing cards?
You got the lads playing cards, brag and stuff like this, you know.
Was that against the army regulations?
Well, it might be, but a lot of lads have done it. I mean, in the army, well, you've done a lot of things behind backs, you know.
Did you have any bullying going on, or these initiation ceremonies with young people coming in?
No. No trouble with the local people, the young ones.
And amongst yourselves, was there any bullies amongst you?
Well, you got the odd skirmish, but it was awkward lads that were asking for it, you know. And it's like I said at school, if a bully jumps on, you know, comes for you, if you give way to him, you're in trouble. But if you just give him a bat back, you might get two bats. But if you give him a good thump, it may pull him up, you know.
Did you take to the discipline okay?
Oh, yes. I think, as I said, I was in the boys' brigade and that. And this helps, you know.
Ashamua, as you said, you went from Ashamua to West Hartlepool.
Uh-huh.
Was this a kind of a holding unit that you were in?
When we come home, the holding battalion was there. So Hartlepool must have been a stage along the line where you got equipped up.
And you got your equipment, and then you said you weren't there very long.
Very long. We went to Hartlepool, got our equipment, we come back to Ushermore, then just in days, we were on the train, way down to Dover, across to France.
Had you been given a battalion now?
No.
You were just a draft?
A draft reserves. And we went over to France.
Do you remember the journey from Dover to France?
Yes. We went over from Dover and we went to Cherbourg.
What was your first impressions of France when you landed at Cherbourg?
Well, it was like same as at home, just the language. But when we got off at Cherbourg, we were on the trains and we went to Rouen. This was the reserve base. Durham's and all the different regiments there. And we were there about a week or so.
What was the camp like there in Rouen?
It was just tents. old bell tent and that. Well, this is where we were when the balloon went up. The Dunkirk, the Germans was pushing me. And
did you get any training whilst you were on? I know it was a short period of time.
Yeah, you're still doing your training there. More so, yeah, you know, a bit more advanced. You were mixing with all soldiers, you know.
Did this include more weapons, mortars, and?
No. See, until you joined the battalion, then you went into the specialist groups, you know. But as I say, Dunkirk was building up. Then it was a case of pack up, and we just set off marching. And we wore days, nights, sleeping in orchards, rain. We were on the outskirts of Paris somewhere. Then eventually we ended up at Dreams. Of course, we were getting word through about the Germans pushing. And when we were up marching there, we were going one way and the Belgian fire brigade were coming the other, and the refugees, you know.
What were your impressions of the refugee situation?
Well, it was just a panic.
Did it affect you in any way, watching these people in the state they were in?
Well, it was, you know, thought, what's the world coming to, sort of, you know.
Did they show any unhappiness with you or animosity because they were running away from the Germans and they weren't being stopped?
No. Well, you try to put yourself in their shoes.
How were you able to move through? Because the roads would be packed, were they not?
Well, mainly at night, we marching at night. You managed to squeeze through. You got the odd Stuka diving, you know.
And were these attacking the refugees?
Well, the traffic on the roads and that, things like that. You know, the columns that's moving.
Did you see any of the results of these attacks?
No. They kept us on the move. Then eventually we ended up with this at Reims. And it was quiet that it was over into France, you know, Reims. And we were there about 2 or 3 weeks when, right, pack up. And we were put into trucks. Packed in, shoulder to shoulder. Of course, the train set away, but had no clue where we were. Next morning, well, shoulder to shoulder, and next morning, woke up, everybody was on the bottom. Just a heap of old rags. We were at Cherbourg again. Right, off. Marching onto the dock. Now, there's the gangway, this boat, on the boat. And at the bottom was a French soldier in his uniform. It was in tattered, his boots were worn. You know, you pitied him. Where you stand there with a big sack. And I had to put my bandoliers in the way onto the boat. Crossed back to England, back to Weymouth.
Were you aware at this time that the Germans were really advancing and pushing everything
from? No, we knew nothing about Dunkirk, the evacuation from Dunkirk, nothing. When we got to Weymouth, I remember that crossing, going back, there was about half a dozen of us in the cabin. And there was a big box with the life belts in and all sorts. And I remember lying on top of that, and June and I keep picking myself off the floor and getting on. And they reckon that was being a rough passage. But we were docked, we were flat out. Anyway, when we got out at Weymouth, yeah, mate, the bands were there, and the people, and they'll bring me cups of tea and chocolate, postcards, and we, the MPs, what's up? Is it war? Because we thought, oh, hand of ammunition in. And this is when they broke it, the news to us.
What were your feelings when you heard that news?
And it just knocked the wind. You know, you felt, you know, deflated.
So you'd marched, you'd gone to Cherbourg, then to Rouen, and marched all the way to Reims, ultimately, all the way back again,
and
home. And not seen a German or fired a shot.
Just the aircraft, odd aircraft. Then from Weymouth, we got postcards, you know, right home to let your folks know you were all right. Anyway, the pilot went onto the train. Everybody was... Anyway, after travel during the night, someone says, hey, well, it doesn't. Of course, the train just come alive then. Of course, it didn't stop at Durham, it carried on right through to Newcastle. Of course, when it gets to Newcastle, it turned right, which would bring us down to South Shields, Jarrow. But it turned right, then it turned left over the high level bridge, and we ended up at Crowcrook, Bladon. And this is where we got off the train at Bladon. And this is where the fun started. That arranged breakfast for us. And all it was, when we went with what Dixie's, was a packet of hard biscuits, a bacon on the top. Of course, the lads had just done that nothing. We were pelting about the cooks. Couldn't blame the cooks. And just up the road was some colliery houses, and the old ladies come down, what's the matter, lads? And we were telling them, oh, hang on. And we're bringing the study cakes down. this old, yes, she says, after you have that, come up to number such and such. And there's four, we went up, and we had a bath and a shave. That's the old man's race, I use that. Anyway, we ended up up in the miners' hall in Crowcrook.
Sleeping on the floor again?
Sleeping on the floor. Well, we ended up in the miners hall, and eventually they put me out into different church halls. And the miners hall was the dining room. And it was a brand new, lovely oak floor. And imagine hundreds of lads walking in with their stud boots and not a bit of carpet on the bottom to protect it or nothing. Well, eventually from we start getting weekend, you know, you got your Saturday passes and that thing. And
what were you doing at Crowcrook?
At Crowcrook they're just reorganizing. And we're doing present, you know, like we couldn't just walk out and anyway, we were there about a week, 2 weeks. But the second weekend, there was some of the lads, oh, we're going home. On Saturday, we're going home. So, right, Saturday morning, we come out. Someone lives, you know. And there was four of us, we got in this furniture van. Open back thing, you know. there's wardrobes in and different things. And you could go to the front, there was just the board up, and you could talk to the driver and that like. And Crow Croup was about a couple of miles from Bladen. And he said, hey lads, the MPs are on the road here, they're checking the vehicles over. Of course, we said, what the hell's on here like? And of course, the driver said, hey, you better scarper. So we got in the wardrobes. And we heard a tailboard, and looking up somewhere was at the tailboard. Then the wagon pulled away. Of course, we come out and we said, what's all that about? Oh, we didn't know, but they were looking for soldiers, like, anyway. Of course, the driver nearly shot off the road when we spoke to him, you know. But we got to home. Then we come back on the Sunday morning. When we got off the bus, there's the MPs there. Seemed they had got orders to move. And thought that the lads had got away, you know. And it played in the schoolroom. It was full of lads, and we were sent off to our different destinations. So this is where I joined the 2nd Battalion at Bridlington.
What date was this?
Oh, no. Oh, it must have been about June. Around about June or July, 40.
The 2nd Battalion had a pretty rough time in France. What condition was it in when you got to it?
Well, Dunkirk and that, Sergeant Major McLean, he was there, and the Durhams, like, they fought the rear action. They, you know, but when I joined the battalion, this is when all the reserves come in to make, you know, and the lads just seemed, though, a lot of old soldiers. And when we mixed with them, this is when you start soldiering, like.
They didn't give you a lot of horror stories of what they've been through?
No, you find, I always found that any lads that had been in any fight and all like that, they didn't talk much about it. But they were fine, like the lads in Bridlington. This the second day of they went in that area. The 6th Brigade, we were in Bridlington. And we were billeted in empty houses, private houses, you know, empty houses in the streets.
Were these requisitioned houses?
Uh-huh.
Were you sleeping again on floors?
On floors, polyhouses.
What company had you joined?
I joined B Company. From B Company, I was 2-inch mortarman. In my platoon, I was 2-inch mortarman. Then they were putting courses. There was a course for 3-inch mortars. And Sergeant Major McLean, he was in charge, Sergeant Major, for the 3-inch mortar platoon. And all the 2-inch mortarmen had to report to the 3-inch mortars on this course. And he put me through the drills and that on a 3-inch mortar. And we had about a week or so with him, firing and things like that, you know, getting to know the mortars. And he brought them all together and he says, right, I want you, Greg. And this is how we come to be in the 3-inch mortars.
Let us talk a little while about the 3-inch mortar as a weapon. Can you describe it?
Well, it was a big base plate, you know, and a tripod, then there was the barrel. And they were weird, you know. On room marches, not you had to hump all this. And then the bombs, they were 10-pound bombs, and there was cases, was about 3 bombs in. Smoke and HA. But it was very good, accurate.
How did you fire?
Well, the number one, he set the sights, and that when you mount the mortar, you know. Number one, he had the base plate, and he puts the base plate down, you know, roughly in line with the target. Number two, he had the barrel which slotted in, you know, like a nut slotted in. Number three, he had the tripod. And when he got mount gun, he opened the tripod out, and the base plate went down, the barrel went in, and he had a sleeve which shut over the barrel, you know, and a spring catch to hold it all together. Then number one, he set on with the handles, you know.
The sights
and that. And while he's doing that, number three, he's got the bombs, and number four with the bombs that passed him up to number three, who passed him up to number two. And number two was the man that went and got the order fire. Number one whipped the cap off the top, dust cap thing off the top. Number two popped it in, and boom. And then you're lit again.
What was the process of actually firing? How did it fire when you?
Well, the end of the bomb, the tail of the bomb, it had like packets of powder and little cellophane packets around and springs to hold it on. At different ranges, you altered the ductile and packets out now. And in the bottom was a cartridge, just like a shotgun cartridge. And in the bottom of the barrel was a thumb piece of the striker. When you dropped the bomb in, it slid down the barrel, hit the cartridge, which set the fuse, the cellophane off, and that got you the thrust. And where it went, about 2,000 feet up.
Very noisy, was it?
Well, the thump, you know, after you fired a few, that base plate in Arakan or something, you had to dig them out 2 or 3 foot down with it. Fine. You, number one was lagging, setting the sight, so when you're in action and you've got to dig it up, then reset it, you know.
What was the maximum range that it could fire?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'd say, 2,000 yards, probably more.
And you said you had high explosive and smoke. A proficient team, how many shells would or bombs would go off in a given time?
See, when you range, you'd send a smoke. And if it was on target, right, we 3 rounds of it. And there was 3 bombs. Bump. 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 If they wanted more, 3 round rapids again, you know.
You could obviously adjust it for distance. And for
that's right,
side movement.
The tripod there, you know, it had a handle on the side to take it that way, and there was one underneath to lift it.
Horizontal and vertical.
That's right.
Good weapon?
Good weapon, So, in them days, we had 1,500 weight trucks. And they went on exercise and that. On road marches, you had to carry the pretty lot. And Eventually, we got grain carriers. And eventually, the mortars in Burma were mounted in the front of the carrier. They learned of the...
We'll come to that, of course, later. How many would be in a mortar team?
Well, on the view, it was number 1, 2, 3, 4. And there was the NCO charge of the gun.
And he would be what rank?
Full corporal or sergeant, like San Hurston, San Kerr.
How many mortars were in a platoon, mortar platoon?
We had 3 mortars. I'm going after drivers that I knew. There's Frankie Barr, Jimmy Rumley, myself. Then there was another lad that just can't think of his name. Could be three, four carriers.